Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Joins us for the weekly update here on a Friday morning. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Many of our listeners already know, we have a lot of news followers among us, that the President of the United States is planning on heading to Israel next month. What do you think of the timing of this trip?
Well, we don't know exactly what day it will be or what time he will go, but we know the general target date is in mid-March.
What do you think that he's been taking the trip right at the beginning of his second term? Let's put it that way.
Well, I think he had said all along that he was going to go. I think he wants to be able to make the announcement and make this to highlight several things. One is the concern about Jordan, and he will visit Jordan. He will visit Israel, obviously, and the PA. He is not going with a peace plan. I do believe that perhaps they will try to get a summit of Bibi, maybe with the king and with Abbas together, although that is not, nothing like that is yet set. He says that he wants to show support for Israel and Israel's security given the events in the region, and people say that they want to put a better light on the relationship with Netanyahu. The issues will be Syria, Iran, and of course the peace process or non-peace process. Kerry was supposed to go, the new Secretary of State, but I understand that he will not go in the next days as we had originally thought, but he may go with the president, I guess not to upstage the president's visit by going first. So there's a lot of speculation, but I think people often read too much into these things. It's so early in the new administration when people haven't even gotten their feet wet that to think that there's some master plan, I think this is to mute the question about... why he's never been.
I mean, not to defend the skeptics, but wouldn't you agree that if he would have taken this trip a year ago, it would have been much more politically beneficial?
Well, yes, and he'll argue. You see, I'm not doing it for politics. I'm doing it because of the relationship and the substance, and it was the right timing for him to do it. He is not going to visit Egypt and other countries. I know there were reports to that effect. From what I understand, in terms of the Middle East, he will only do Jordan, the PA, and Israel. He may visit Greece and other countries, but nothing in the Middle East, so as to show that his purpose is just to highlight this.
Right. I mean, the question I'm sure that anybody in this audience would ask if they were speaking to you as I am, does this mean more pressure? Does a trip to Israel by the President of the United States, and I know you're saying that the agenda's not set and there are a lot of misconceptions, a lot of expectations, etc., but wouldn't one be able to argue that it likely means more pressure on Israel to get something done regarding the peace process?
It could well, and I think the first pressure is that Netanyahu has to have a government together soon in order to prepare and to be in a good position. You can't have the president coming and he doesn't have a government. So I think that that's one thing it creates. Second, there have been a lot of visits back and forth. I think that there are a lot of critical issues beyond the question of negotiations right now, and Israel's or whatever happened in Syria was a indication of this, and things that are happening in vis-a-vis Iran, concerns about Egypt that the United States and how it is impacting the Gulf and others. There are a lot of important issues that the United States and Israel are dealing with. The Chief of Staff of Israel is here for a week as a guest of the Chief of Staff of the United States. Molcho is here, which may underscore what you said, and he's the chief negotiator. Other people have been coming, and I know that people who were supposed to be in Israel next week when we were there have indicated that they, in fact, may be traveling abroad.
Do you think that there'll be any... I mean, this one's hard to predict, but I just wonder if... I assume the prime minister has to go way beyond the call of duty in making the president feel comfortable, lest someone suspect that there's going to be retaliation for the way that the prime minister was perceived to have been treated at the White House.
Well, in subsequent visits, though, he was treated well, and he has visited the White House very often, I think as much as any foreign leader, and the two have talked on the phone several times. Clearly, there was some anger about what was perceived as interference by Netanyahu. I think this will put it to rest, and that the two will put on a very good face and stress the joint efforts, the joint military and other cooperation that's going on. So how the substance will play out, it's much too early to tell.
Yeah, Netanyahu usually rises to these occasions.
Absolutely. He knows exactly how to put on a good show, and I think that the president knows very well, and both know what's at stake, and it's in both interests to show a strong front, and it's both interests of the countries to send a message to all of those who are hateful of both, that the two are together despite the media reports.
All right. You just mentioned in passing about Syria and the airstrike. A week later, after all of our speculation immediately after this episode, will Assad respond or not?
Well, it's interesting because so far they have not, and I'm not sure that they will do anything to respond, in part because the foreign minister said yesterday, the foreign minister of Syria, that in fact Israel's act was an act of retaliation because of the successes of the Syrian army against the Israeli-backed rebels, meaning that there's no need to retaliate because, in fact, it was Israel retaliating for Syria's effective countering of their involvement in the civil war. I know that Assad asked Iran, according to reports, to hit Israel, and they said, take care of your own business. There are a number of reasons. First of all, there's pressure from Turkey publicly calling on them to attack, but that's also to embarrass Assad. There are many other agendas when people use an event like this. The rebel groups are calling on him to attack because they want to divert attention, and many of them want to see Israel respond, and that's part of the reason why Assad won't, because he knows that a really tough response hitting one of his offices could eliminate his regime or certainly topple his regime. So he does not want to hit back and open up a front with Israel when his army is so stretched fighting the rebels in his own country.
Yeah, but as time goes by, you agree that it's less likely he'll respond, or hey, it could happen any time, doesn't matter how much time has passed by.
No, you've seen it with the killing of Mubnia, how 6 months, a year later, and people use it a pretense for terrorist attacks.
Right.
Or you can have anybody carried out, and then everybody says, well, it is a response to something that happened earlier. I don't see it happening right now. Israel has three red lines in terms of the military situation there. One is the chemical weapons being transferred. Two is missiles, long-range missiles. And three is advanced anti-aircraft. And if they had word that these things were being transferred, and the reason I understand that the research center was hit was really a secondary explosion. In other words, they hit this convoy, and one of the collateral damages was to the research center, because there's no sign of a crater there. There's no sign that it was a specific target. Israel hasn't said it did it, but there were enough hints given by Barak and others during the week that we sort of could draw that conclusion fairly safely.
And nobody seems to regret that there was collateral damage like that, at least on the Israeli side.
No, there's not. Nobody is setting a card to Assad.
Nobody's made an issue of it. By the way, emailer points out, and I meant to mention this regarding the trip of Obama to Jerusalem. So Netanyahu did make statements this week in response to things happening in Israel regarding West Bank policy. You think that also was out there because of the imminent visit?
Well, it was. I think they're referring to Amidvor's comment.
Right, more of an internal thing. Right.
And Amidvor is National Security Council. I was very surprised because he's not a dove, obviously, on these issues. So could it be, ballooning and preparing the public for something? Was it just an off-the-hand comment, which, unfortunately, Israelis do these off-the-cuff remarks and then later on say it was out of context or something, as do Americans and others.
it's an international problem.
I've not yet heard whether it was intentional or whether this was, just something saying, look, the settlement issue has become an issue in which the international community latches on. You see the rising chorus of condemnation and criticism, especially in Europe. You know, they don't care so much about tens of thousands of people dying in Syria, but building an E-1 has become a worldwide cause.
Well, yeah, of course. It would be unfair for me to not ask you about the coalition discussions that are going on. He has been criticized in the past, Netanyahu, for trying to build a broad coalition and negotiating with the religious parties, for instance, many of whom often have many demanding things that they in fact demand, and other parties as well. Is he heading down that road again? Is he speaking to parties and negotiating with parties that really are going to make the deal, will not make the deal worthwhile for him?
Well, it depends what options are going to be open to him. It seems that they're shrinking and shift back and forth. And if you follow the comments of the leaders of parties, you see that even Bennett says he doesn't want to go in at times. And Bennett and Yesh Atid are talking, and Lapid met with Bennett, and they meet with each other, and Shas meets with them, and then they've come up with formula to bridge gaps on issues like the draft and the shared responsibility, as it's now called. And Netanyahu has to play them all off against each other, because that's the only way you're going to get a coalition without such demands as to be crippling for the new government. It may well be that this will be a short-lived government. It could be that it will be a narrow majority. It could be that he will finally come to some formula where he will have a broader coalition, and some parties may even stay out, just be in the Knesset.
Right, but you'd have to agree. If we were speculating, you'd say chances are Bennett is going to be part of the coalition, right?
That's what people thought. I mean, there are days
when
people didn't think that, and it keeps waffling back and forth because...
I know, but push comes to shove, you'd say...
I would assume that they will be in the government.
Okay, so
that would be a most natural outcome.
So now push comes to shove. Will the religious parties be part of it or not?
I think very likely that they will be part of it, but it depends on what the conditions that, let's say, Yesh Atid would set that become too onerous for them to come to an agreement.
It always seems like the most important thing to Netanyahu is the numbers, and you've told us that that is significant, that it's much harder to rule when you have 61 than if you have 91, right?
It's harder also when you have a broad coalition because you have more demands, but
right.
the real question that he will face is the budget. He has to get it through by law, and if they don't pass a budget, then the government will fall, and you will be back to elections in a few months, with the result not being much different than what it is, although Netanyahu's personal popularity has not gone up, and people debate how much it's gone down, and I think what Lapid did was perhaps the mistake of a novice in politics when you say, I'm going to be the next prime minister,
right,
which then worsens his personal relationship with Netanyahu.
But what did it do to his popularity numbers in Israel, I wonder?
No effect.
No effect at all. So, I mean, it's so funny. You've just described to us a scenario with the budget situation where in 2013 there could be another Israeli election.
In late 2013.
Right, I'm saying. It's possible.
Very possible.
Not saying likely, but possible. It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, around the world on the web, jmnam.org. Malcolm Homeline's with us. We're talking about the events of the week. We call it the weekly update here at JM and the AM. There was a meeting this week, essentially, I know it was a meeting of individuals, but essentially of Iran and Egypt. And this had not happened in many decades, correct?
It hasn't happened since 79, since the revolution, I think, that you didn't have a visit of this kind. But it's a return. You remember Morsi visited Tehran when they had the summit, the Muslim summit, I think. And it's interesting to see what happened, because this was going to be a very high-profile Ahmadinejad venture in his waning months, and he thought he would get, again, a victorious response to his visit. And in fact, he did not get that at all. He came to several places where there were big demonstrations against him in Cairo, and somebody started throwing his shoe at him and hitting him with his shoe, so they beat a hasty retreat. And more importantly, when he came to Al-Azhar, they held a press conference at the end of the meeting, and remember, this produces most of the clerics, and it's a religious center for Sunnis, and he was berated publicly at the press conference by them, and he, was embarrassed because they started going after his and Iran's interference in Sunni countries, i.e. the Gulf and elsewhere. And he was I mean, he was clearly embarrassed by it, and it put much more emphasis on the Sunni-Shiite split, which I've talked about here
many times.
And it came within the setting of Khamenei using the same week as an opportunity to reject talks with the United States. And when the United States is reaching out and saying that they want to set up and advance direct negotiations with Iran, Khamenei gets up before his Air Force officers and says, we're not talking to them as long as they have sanctions, as long as they have conditions. Then, and the U.S. is ratcheting up the economic war with more sanctions, although the EU court, and this is important but got no coverage, lifted the sanctions on two of the major banks, including Bank Sadarat, which we've talked about.
Why?
In Iran, saying that there was not sufficient evidence of their direct involvement in funding of terrorism. And this is a serious blow, because you could take one by one each of the entities and they could be exempted, and that would really destroy the impact. And hitting the banks is key because of the isolation of the central bank and not enabling them to trade. It doesn't impact the sanctions in the U.S., but Europe is critical because they've been doing a lot of the business through Europe.
The White House expressed disappointment with that move?
They were upset with the move, and I think for many European countries it's upsetting, but I'm sure this is something that will run, you know, have many more stages before it runs its course.
Ahmadinejad said two things, of many things, but two things I want to bring up of note on this visit to Cairo. Number one, that now Iran has nuclear capability, whatever that means. I don't even know if capability was a word he used, because you never know. You know, every time they declare they have this or that, I still don't know, you know, to what stage that's acknowledging. And the second thing is, nonetheless, even though he has nuclear capability, he's uninterested in attacking Israel. So that must have made you sleep a little better that night, Malcolm, when you heard that Ahmadinejad has no interest in attacking Israel.
He also said that Iran was ready to destroy Israel, and so you can never take seriously, and you have to check very carefully what the actual language was, even things that you know, we read reports about. Iran is clearly ratcheting up its aggressiveness. I've talked about this for a long time, because people don't look at each of the components. You know, we may discuss one or two each week, but in fact, they're doing much more. There was a shipment caught in Yemen of Iranian equipment, military equipment, huge amounts of ammunition, but surface-to-surface missiles, rocket-propelled grenades, many other advanced things. And I've heard from officials that this is only one of six such ships. We see them exporting these advanced anti-aircraft systems, which are very dangerous because it limits the ability of countries like Israel or others, or in Mali, it would limit the French ability to strike back, and all the while they're moving ahead on their nuclear program. Yadlin this week, a former head of military intelligence, said it's 4 to 6 months to enrich enough, and meaning that they have everything in place. They have the missiles, they have the weaponization, they have the enrichment, and they just have to cross that line and decide to make the final push for it. Their economy is in ruins. Their rial, their currency, went down in 2 weeks from 33,000 to the dollar to 39 or 40,000, more than a 20% decrease, and yet none of this really affects him. There was a guy caught in Germany yesterday with a check for I think $70 million drawn on Venezuelan currency at least, and he was stopped by the customs coming from Turkey, and he couldn't explain. He said he doesn't know. He couldn't tell him why he had a check for $70 million. The equivalent of $70 million.
They have checks for that kind of amount.
That's interesting too. But it turned out, at least it seems that it was a valid check. So that's just a sideline. But the fact is that they are becoming more and more aggressive. And if we catch them lying about monkeys, their missile program is advancing all the time too.
What do you mean lying about it?
Well, you know, they said that they put this monkey up.
And that's not true?
Return. No, the likelihood is that they did put a monkey up. The likelihood also is he didn't make it back safely, because the monkey they displayed afterwards, they said, is not the same monkey that we showed before. And McCain got into trouble because he called Ahmadinejad, who said he would like to be the first Iranian in space, or to go to space, and he called him a monkey for it. And people said it was racist. It was not. It was just an allusion to what had occurred with the monkey this week.
So Ahmadinejad is saying he'll be the first Iranian in space, who doesn't realize that based on their space program, he may not make it back here alive.
So we'd be very happy if
Ahmadinejad,
all these guys would go into space and just stay there.
What do you hear from the Conference of Presidents mission that was in France this week?
Well, it's been, thank God, very successful, and we put a lot of work into it. They had meetings with President Hollande and the foreign minister, Fabius, with the interior minister, Wiles, who's in charge of anti-Semitism, the prime minister, many others. They visited Toulouse and met with the people from the school.
That oh, wow.
The children. It was very emotional.
Kalakavod.
And went to Drancy and to the Shoah memorials there. Even met with the Muslim imam from Drancy, who was very sympathetic and very helpful and outspoken. And you got to support those guys who are willing to put themselves on the line. As you know, there's a real problem with radicalization of the Muslim population, Muslim youth and others in France. There's a rise of anti-Semitism. The Jewish community is a wonderful community. There are more than 100 kosher restaurants in Paris alone. Very involved community, but also, I think, very concerned. And, you know, there's been an out-migration, or at least people buying homes in Israel, elsewhere. And we went to explore to show solidarity with them and to really get a better understanding. They pressed President Hollande about designating the Hezbollah a terrorist organization. He would not commit to it, but at least he heard very good arguments for it.
What is the split on this issue? Which countries have designated Hezbollah as a terrorist organization, and who refrains to do so?
Well, the United States, Canada, I think Australia, a few others have designated. The Europeans, who are the key in this, because as long as the Europeans don't do anything, there's no consequence for an attack like Bourges in Bulgaria.
Right.
People remember in July, 5 Israelis killed with the Bulgarian bus driver, 32 injured.
Right.
But it was one of a number of attempts. There had been one of a similar nature at the same place 6 months earlier. Here they trace it down, and the Bulgarian government, in a move of incredible courage against a lot of internal opposition that is being and criticism leveled against the government, against a lot of pressure from Iran and others that they not do so, they named names. This is very unusual. And they're afraid of the retaliations, you know, the terrorist attacks that also cow the countries of Europe. And until now, they kept saying Hezbollah is not our problem. Well, now you have an attack proven on European soil. So you can't avoid responsibility. You can't say this is not our problem. You know, it's everybody else's problem. And now their argument is, well, there are separate political and military wings of Hezbollah. They're making the same argument regarding Hamas, saying, well, there's the political wing and there's the military wing. This is absolutely untrue. This is all one. This is all one entity. There's an international arrest warrant for this Australian and Canadian of Lebanese descent, or people carrying passports from those countries who were responsible. One of them, one of the terrorists, was actually killed in the blast itself. And just think that if they don't listen, Bulgaria is not going to hit Lebanon. It's not going to attack in response. So there will be no consequence, and Hezbollah can continue to do business as before. We see that their role in Syria, we see Hezbollah's aggressive role around the world, fomenting terrorism, continuing spreading drugs and cigarettes and all the other smuggling that they do. And showing the fear is only going to incite them to do worse and worse.
When other presidents of the U.S., I'm asking this because of the distinction you just made that we criticize in terms of political wing, military wing when it comes to Hezbollah. When presidents of the United States in the past, and I believe there's only three or four sitting presidents who've been to Israel, Clinton and Bush on multiple trips, they've always met, in addition to with the Israelis, to the equivalent of the PA or PLO, right? There was never a trip where there was not this equal showing between the quote-unquote two sides.
Can't say never. I don't recall that they would go without meeting.
But there's no way Obama could go
and
neglect to meet with Abbas. That would be impossible.
No, that would be then painted as a setback and saying that this was politically motivated.
Right.
He has to see him, and he will see him.
AP reports that South Korean and U.S. troops began naval drills Monday in a show of force partly directed at North Korea amid signs that Pyongyang will soon follow through on a threat to conduct its third atomic test. So is this a different strategy than against Iran? Iran, you've described for us for years the strategies that the U.S. has to take, economic sanctions, negotiations with countries around Iran, etc. Is this a different type of strategy where the only way they can get the message across to North Korea that the U.S. means business is to show that they're ready to cooperate in tests with South Korea?
Well, it is a way to manifest America's deep concern, and America, you know, still is the major presence in the region as opposed to, let's say, the Europeans, who do have a presence in the Mediterranean and big vested interests there. Here, the circumstances are not identical, although everybody should know that there is a direct linkage. And when there is an atomic test, such as the ones North Koreans are talking about, you can be sure many Iranians will be there, just as the missile program and all these other things are being done in concert with one another. There's a synergistic relationship between South Korea and North Korea and Iran in the development of their nuclear programs, of also high tech weapons, etc. So we shouldn't think this is disconnected. And it's the show of force by the United States is to shore up the South Koreans and to send a strong message. The Iranians recently did a big exercise as well, and there the United States and no one else did anything in response. And in fact, the withdrawal of one of our aircraft carriers from the Mediterranean, as announced by Secretary Panetta, is a huge mistake. It's a huge error. And maybe it's put pressure to increase the Defense Department's budget at a time when everybody gets it, why you need this presence in the Gulf for the protection of our allies, for protection of American interests and the shipping lanes of oil. For us to withdraw now an aircraft carrier, the message to the Iranians is we're winning. We're driving them out of the Persian Gulf, the Iranian Gulf, the whatever they call it these days, the Arab Gulf. And the Russians now are engaged in the biggest exercise they've done since the fall in 1991 of the Soviet Empire. You have 23 naval vessels. You have strategic air squadrons and anti-aircraft units being deployed, including ships with nuclear weapons in the Mediterranean and in the Black Sea. This is a show of force on their part for a variety of reasons. One, it is to show that they're a superpower still. Two, that if Assad leaves and wants to go with the Alawites, they're protecting the Alawite coast, the potential area where the Alawites would go. It's certainly an anti-Western move to show a force. It is to show that they can still project their force, even though they have, I think, more limited ability. I think it is to prevent the West from thinking of an attack on Syria, an air attack, to show that they have a presence there that will counter it, wanting to show their power in the region to other countries. They have many issues that are behind this kind of an exercise. It's really serious. The Russian chief of staff is the one running this exercise himself, and you know, 23 vessels, you know, manipulating and maneuvering around that area is a significant presence.
Who do we protest to about that? Does it pay to be in touch with members of Congress or direct letters to the White House? I mean,
well, about the removal of the aircraft carrier, certainly people should write to the Armed Forces Committee. You can write to the White House and say that this is exactly the wrong message. You're undermining our own sanctions regime. We're going to bolster the Iranians and the Hezbollah and others, because they say that, you see, you just have to wait them out, you beat them back. Yeah, then the United States offers direct negotiations. And Khamenei tells them we're not interested, or we're not interested unless you meet our conditions for it. And we're seeing more aggressiveness in many areas on the part of all of these elements of the Muslim Brotherhood, and you learn more and more about the connections between the different groups, and you see Morsi moving to gain more and more control as his economy collapses. So they don't really have an agenda. They don't have even a social agenda for the people. Their goal is control, and you run the risk of in Syria of a collapse of the regime leading to similar results.
Unbelievable. Two quick things. In Detroit, What do you think of this a sign over the abandoned auto plant, which displayed the same words that people saw when they came into Auschwitz?
Yeah, somebody made a stupid judgment. It doesn't seem to be linked to any neo-Nazi or other kind of operation. I think it's more poor judgment from what I've heard and what I've read about it.
And finally, we read again about about members of the Israeli government trying to alter its electoral system. Haven't we been down this road before? Direct elections of a prime minister. I mean, I understand that whenever things don't go exactly the way it's like here in this country, when, president wins the popular vote and loses the electoral votes, all of a sudden half the country wants to change the system. The one thing about this country, though, is that it has never been changed amid all the protests. In Israel, we've gone through this back and forth. You think anything's going to come from this effort?
Not likely. I think the first exercise in of that kind, when they shifted to for a brief period to direct elections, wasn't a great experience.
Right.
I think that the political outcome of this election, as every election that doesn't have a determined outcome, puts more pressure on for some sort of reform, and I do think that it is called for. Maybe they will raise the threshold to a higher level in order to be able to get into the Knesset, so you eliminate, some of the small parties. The funding for these parties, can't understand why people give money to guys who have no chance of getting in.
I mean, that happens in every country. It happens here also.
There are people who are trying to advocate a particular cause, marijuana, the marijuana parties and other parties where they have a particular agenda. So it's like, instead of taking ads, they can take they can have their own party and therefore get a lot more free publicity than what they could afford to buy.
Almost half the Knesset is new members. You're going to have to do a lot of glad handing when you land in Israel, Malcolm.
Right.
Meet a lot of new people.
There are I think 53 first timers.
Wow.
There are at least there are supposedly more than 40 religious members.
Right.
Of the Knesset.
Yeah, we discussed that.
They're all different degrees. And it's very interesting that I think there are more people, religious people, elected from those parties that are not identified as religious. You also see a breakdown in terms of the ethnic voting patterns, that they don't vote strictly Russians, for instance, for Lieberman's party, as they did, or for others that are, specifically designated as appealing to their ethnic or geographic background. So it's an interesting process, and the real question is what it will lead to. Right now, the issue, the domestic agenda, gets short shrift, and people want to see things happening. And you see Bibi's popularity has gone down a little bit, and that he could be vulnerable to challenges in the future. He will have to start addressing some of these really tough issues. That's why the budget is so important. When you have to cut as much money as he has to, billions of shekels.
When you say tough issues, you mean army service, welfare, etc.?
Those are issues, and the as they call it, the shared responsibility issues. But also where you make the cuts in the budget. And he has to cut. If you want to maintain the economic stability of the country and have it continue to have even a more moderate growth, and it will be more moderate than the miracle of the past, but the costs, and they're not immune to all the things that affect other countries.
Well, I'm assuming that Knesset pensions will be the first thing to go. That's what I'm assuming.
And the Volvos and the drivers.
Exactly. Although I hear it's not a Volvo anymore. Someone told me what it is now, and I can't remember the name. So, some newer model car. That's the that's the favorite among members of Knesset.
Well, we're really glad to hear that.
I'll try to find it out for next week.
Probably right. Iranian cars in Iranian.
I know you're planning on heading to Israel, so hopefully next week we will have some type of first-hand report, as they say, Mr. Honlein.
God willing.
Have a wonderful Shabbos. There he is, Malcolm Honlein, Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. And he joins us on Fridays for the weekly update here at JM in the AM.